So I have a touch of what one might call a little correction. I don't even know if it's a correction.
Oh.
Who's to say?
Yeah.
I just want to revisit something.
I'm ready.
I was listening to another podcast when people were talking about one of everybody's favorite kind of psychological buzzy topics right now of attachment theory.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, in fact, do an episode on attachment theory. Go back into the archives, people. It's an episode I enjoyed. But if you were with us for that one, I just feel obligated, based on some things I was listening to this week, that I actually think I need to revise some of my statements about my own attachment theory.
Okay. Okay. I'm ready.
So when we talked about attachment theory and how we thought we were attached, uh-huh. and you correct me if I'm wrong, not trying to speak for you, but you cited yourself as more of like an avoidantly attached person.
This is correct.
And I cited myself as someone who is like maybe like more anxiously attached.
Uh-huh.
And what I was listening to that was like so illuminating for me, and I was like, oh, here's some nuance, bitch, is that I don't know if I think I'm anxiously attached.
It can be a mix. I've read that it can be a mix.
Well, hear me out on this, because I think I actually like dated a fair amount of people who maybe like deliberately employed some intermittent reinforcement. I think when I was thinking about attachment, I was thinking a lot about my romantic connections,
yeah,
maybe more than I was thinking about friends or like
that's a good point. Yeah.
Family, even. I was like definitely thinking about attachment, like definitely more in the lens of romance.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I have a lot of people who like kind of cat string me, you know, where you'd be like, you play with a cat and like the string and they're like really into it. And then you just like drop the string on the ground and the cat's like,
Absolutely. Well, that's also, if I may just interject, like very much like 2000s, like boy culture of negging and like straight culture, like socialized men and women into thinking that all men are anxiously attached and all women are like clingy and crazy.
Yeah. And so I felt like people would like maybe give me a lot and then would be like, again, this like intermittent reinforcement that mm-hmm. I feel like I would be like kind of ignored. And I think that made me act like out or
listen,
to,
we can
like,
have
seem a little bit more anxious
baggage and trauma from things that aren't our childhood.
Right. And I think honestly, like overall, I think I'm a more securely attached than like insecurely attached person. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I find myself when I'm like in times of stress, and maybe I'm like recognizing that now because I'm like in this move, and like it's just been like, you know what, 2022 has been a hard year for me. It's mm-hmm. had a lot of grief. It's just like it hasn't been great, you know, but I'm in this move. Shout out to the last podcast episode I'm recording in this apartment. Coming at you from a new one later. Anyway, I digress. But I find myself like in these times of stress and like the way people have like, I just haven't wanted to deal with some people or mm-hmm. like things that have happened lately that I've just been like, man, I just feel like really out of step with this person, like in relationship to like, you know, our friendship, our mm-hmm. relationship, whatever it is. And I'm like, oh my God, I think I'm like kind of more avoidant.
I wonder if a lot of people are experiencing that right now, like because of like COVID kind of, mm-hmm. and like just like a lot of stress, overwhelm. I think a lot of us have like a new normal for what we can handle socially. Like I definitely.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
Like I get overstimulated way easier and that's super frustrating and like mm-hmm. wasn't totally part of my personality before in the same way. And so like I would guess that maybe that has something to do with it. I would be curious though if other people are experiencing kind of a shift toward like more avoidant kind of anxious behavior.
I wonder. I would feel like it probably would be in there, but I do think that like even pre-COVID,
mm-hmm.
oftentimes my way to like if I don't like people or if I don't like the way like people are treating me or like whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
I think oftentimes my move is to be like really withholding.
Yeah, to
like
Gemini.
Like, oh, well, like you Gemini's don't even it. Get to know about me, which would be the You're greatest so right. gift.
Like, so petty and withholding. Punishing. Yeah,
so petty and withholding. And I'm like, I think that's kind of more of it.
Well, as someone who also, or perhaps rather, experiences avoidant attachment, I think, I will say that, like, that's not really something I experience. I'm not really, like, in my avoidance, it's about, like, my feelings. It's about, like, just me wanting to, like, protect myself from, like, the negative experience of, like, interacting with someone who might be upset with me. It's not
mine is, like,
ever.
I'm going to make you feel bad.
So that makes me wonder if you are the other one. Because
maybe
like,
I am anxiously
about,
attached. Maybe you like guys, still about it's getting all about attention me.
Because they're still thinking about you if you're punishing them. You know what I mean?
Wow. God, I'm such a hoe. Man, maybe it just comes full circle all the way back to where we started. Also, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
Fuck Date Edition. Ugh, you guys, the Fup Date. Why Are You Like This? The weekly podcast where we Fup Date once a month on whatever we're pontificating on at the time. That's my counterpart. Ooh, my partner in crime. Ooh, I don't know. I don't know what I want to call you. That's Jamie Ryan in Los Angeles.
And that's Austin Williams trying to change her attachment style on paper, but unable to do so in Chicago.
Yeah, maybe, dude. I don't know. I do think, though, some of the things of, like, needing to feel validated, I'm like, no, I think, like, maybe some of that was, like, actually, like, in response to, like, deliberate stressors.
I do think that that is a very, very real possibility as well.
I just
hadn't
heard it spelled out that way before. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I feel this.
Well, welcome to the club, perhaps, of the anxiously attached. That's just like a new thing for you to deal with in addition to your other attachment that I can't remember. I just cannot remember what the clingy one is called right now.
The clingy one is anxious. The clingy one is anxious. Okay. And then the avoidant is the other one.
Thank
and
you.
Then there's secure.
Yeah.
But yeah, like anxious is like the clingy one, as you might call it, Jamie.
My bad. Anyway.
But it's funny, and I like that you mentioned like the COVID of it all, because I do think that's part of it. And man, I've been saying to so many people lately, like everybody kept saying during COVID, like, oh, this pandemic's going to test some friendships. No, you know what's fucking testing friendships? The like after the pandemic. And it's like, yeah, like COVID is alive and well. I'm keenly aware. Don't come for me and be like, it's not over. But it's this time where we're like trying to return to life in a lot of ways. And people are like not in the same places. And I just like, I know a lot of people who are really struggling with their friendships and relationships as like a result, where they're like, man, like I spent all this time by myself for 2 years and like we did not come out in the same place.
And also during that 2 years, like trauma, growth, change, like all of those things happened. And so we're all like emerging from this cocoon as slightly different people than
when
we went
in. I knew
you
were
going
to use cocoon. You love to say we're coming out of a cocoon.
Sorry. As slightly different people than we went in. And I do think it's always kind of uncomfortable when we have to like reconcile different versions of ourselves socially. Like if you're with a new friend from the new city that you live in and your hometown friends are visiting, I feel like sometimes that can be like a jarring experience for people where like, you know, you kind of have to straddle two social selves and like one is maybe a previous self and one is a new self. And I think like a lot of us maybe like our friends don't necessarily like know kind of the ways that we've like grown and changed.
That's true.
And that could be part of it. But also it's the roommate thing of like, if you don't see your roommate for 5 days, you think that you're mad at each other.
Well, there's that.
There's always that.
Well, I mean, speaking of all these like little relationships though, it's actually, it is kind of all in tandem. We're not actually
absolutely
talking about attachment theory.
Related.
Yeah, but we are talking about specifically a fun article that came out at the end of March in The Atlantic called Why People Are Acting So Weird.
Yeah.
It was under the like politics kind of header over there, and it's written by our friend Olga Kazan. But the little subtext here is crime, unruly passenger incidents and other types of strange behavior have all soared recently. Why? Yeah. Listen, dear friends of this show, have you wondered why everyone's driving like a fucking asshole? I don't know. I think there's going to be some wisdom in here for you. I don't know. I've definitely experienced feeling like people are acting weird, not just in these feeling out of step with my own relationships, but just some general weird behavior. Jamie's on the phone with me earlier before we recorded this, and I got flipped off by a pedestrian. So, okay.
And people have been just like ripping open the packages that get dropped off outside my building.
Listen.
Like stealing them.
They're doing it. Listen. This article, Olga just opens up being like, everyone is acting so weird. And at the time of this publication, you know, the most obvious recent weirdness was that whole, like, Will Smith smacking Chris Rock at the Oscars.
The Oscars.
Look, we
incident.
Don't have to live there for forever because I don't really want to have, like, the cultural conversation about that. But it was interesting.
No, but that's in the marinade for this.
It will definitely is. And it's, you know, just like, if you're looking even more closely, it's not just this big like event or something, but like people have been acting like pretty badly on smaller stages for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And Olga talks about in this article, a man who was arrested after he punched a gate agent at the Atlanta airport. Yeah. And the gate agent looked like he was about to punch back, but you know, he had like a colleague who like, bless her soul, like stood on some chairs and said no to the entire situation. I feel like there's a viral video out there, but it wasn't the only viral asshole on a plane video that week. And we've heard so much fucking shit about people being crazy on airplanes.
Just getting dragged off. Yeah.
Like, just insane shit. Just insane shit. And in February, people found, you know, ways to throw tantrums while skiing. Mm. Skiing. Okay. And there was a viral video of a man that, like, slid down a chairlift boarding area of a Canadian resort, 1 foot strapped into a snowboard as he flailed at security guards and refused to comply with a mask mandate. You guys. Like, there's separate footage that shows a maskless man on a ski shuttle screaming, and I quote, "There's nobody wearing masks on any bus in this goddamn town," before calling his fellow passenger a liberal piece of shit and storming off.
Yeah.
I've seen, I think recently, either on TikTok or Insta videos, like some dude like making a huge scene in the movie theater of the new Batman. And I was just like, why is this the new video you see when you're scrolling? It's just like some grown
man
adult like
about
literally
mask.
Having a tantrum.
Yeah.
A tantrum.
Yeah.
But during the pandemic, basically, disorderly, rude, and unhinged conduct kind of seems to have caught on. And all of these like bad behaviors, you know, everything from rudeness and carelessness to literal physical violence has increased. And journalist Matt, and man, Matt, I love you, but he's got a I feel like maybe it's a Greek last name, Galasius.
I think it's Iglesias, like Enrique.
Is that how Enrique spells his
last
name?
Yes, it starts with a Y.
Wow. Yeah. I would have never known, you guys, never seen that man's name in print. Okay, listen, he pointed out in a Substack essay earlier this year that all this stuff has increased. And Americans, and to my point, are driving more recklessly, crashing their cars, and killing pedestrians at higher rates.
That felt
I was driving
so
safely, but I did get flicked off, okay?
Yeah, you did.
Early in 2021, we saw the highest number of, quote, unruly passenger incidents ever, according to the FAA.
Mm-hmm.
And in February of this year, a plane bound for Washington, D.C. had to make an emergency landing in Kansas City, Missouri, after a man tried to break into the cockpit.
And I would say with what plan, but yes.
Like, exactly. I'm like, what? And healthcare workers say that their patients are behaving more violently. At one point, Missouri hospitals plan to outfit nurses with panic buttons, which I...
They go through,
been through
enough.
They've been through enough. I just... Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And this is really interesting. And I actually have a friend who teaches in the Chicago public schools who said that this is true and they're seeing it. That in schools, it's also being reported an uptick in like disruptive behavior.
Well, listen, if the parents are losing their shit, the kids are going to lose it too.
Well, but kids also have been away from other kids for so long and like in those developmental stages, you don't know how to deal with conflict. They said that there are like way more like actual fights breaking out in their schools, which is crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. In 2020, the U.S. murder rate rose by nearly a third, which is the biggest increase on record. And then it rose again in 2021.
It's really...
Car theft spiked 14% last year, and carjackings have surged in various cities. And if there were a national tracker of, like, school board meeting hissy fits, well, it would, you know, be heaving with Indeed data points right now, okay?
See our cousin podcast, Book It, to hear more about that.
Oh, my God. These fucking school boards. Lord help us. But... Olga, you know, goes on to ask us in this article, basically, like, WTF, and how did Americans go from, like, clapping for healthcare workers to threatening to kill them?
And clapping when planes land? Yeah, what's going on?
Listen, more than a dozen experts on crime, psychology, and social norms recently walked our dear friend Olga through a few possible explanations, and we're here to tell you about some of them, because I, too, want to know what the fuck is going on.
We are indeed. So the first person that Olga talks with is Christine Porath, who I'm going to call Christine from now on. She's a business professor at Georgetown. And she's going to tell us that, like, the problem is that we're all stressed out. And I will say that that is accurate. And I will say to my community, to NASA nearby, that when you launch rockets and you don't say that you're going to launch rockets, everyone
is
terrified and, like, moving toward a bunker. So if there could be some way.
Also, you guys, there's, like, actual, like, war breaking out in places right now. So, like, what? No.
If you're going to launch multiple rockets at 7 p.m., just maybe send out a memo. Anyway. We're all stressed out is what I'm here to agree with Christine about. So that could potentially be an explanation for the bad behavior, rage, frustration, etc. She tells us that the pandemic has created a lot of high stress, low reward situations. And Keith Humphreys, who is a psychiatry professor at Stanford, says that now everyone is teetering closer toward their breaking point. So, for example, like someone who may have lost their job, a loved one, a friend, et cetera, you know, you have a crisis in your life. We're all having a lot of crises. And all of these things mean that, like, the pandemic might just, like, push you over the edge. Like, somebody asks you for just, like, to do an extra little thing at work. No, you cannot do that. Suddenly.
Right.
Yeah. A tiny request is, like, just an enormous deal because we got nothing left. And Ryan Martin, who is also a psychology professor, tells us when someone has that angry feeling, it's because of a combination of some sort of provocation, their mood at the time of that provocation, and then how they interpret that provocation. And not only are people encountering more provocations right now, for example, staffing shortages, mask mandates, et cetera.
Right.
But their mood is also worse when provoked. So Americans really don't like each other very much right now, he said. And we see that with the people shouting about the masks and the ski lifts and whatnot.
Wanting to get their hair cut. Mm-hmm.
And there are many of us who are, like, witnessing that, but not necessarily, like, yelling. So, like, I might feel angry but not be yelling about it. And we learned from Christine that rudeness can be contagious. So,
which I just so agree with. Yes. That just on a visceral level.
We've all worked with a complainer, all of us.
Absolutely.
We have. So Christine has found that at work, people spread their negative emotions to their colleagues, bosses, and clients, even if those individuals weren't the source of the negativity. She says people who witness rudeness are 3 times less likely to help someone. That's very upsetting, but I get it.
Right.
She thinks people might be picking up on rudeness from social media even and passing it on, to which I say yikes, but definitely. Or, you know, they might be logging into a Zoom meeting where, like, their boss is overwhelmed and yells at them. Then when that person is at the grocery store later, maybe they're, like, a little bit rude to the cashier. It's like a pay it forward, but negative, and we're all doing it.
Yeah, it's the opposite of that Haley Joel Osment film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And one of the other things that our boy, Keith Humphreys, not Kim Kardashian's 5-minute husband, that psychiatry professor at Stanford that Jamie mentioned, one of the things he gets into, too, is about people drinking more in his conversation with Olga. And I think everybody has either been a part of this or watched friends or other people. It's just like people have been coping with the pandemic by drinking.
Yeah, we all know we're drugs. Coping. Yeah, anything.
Listen, you guys, I'm moving right now and I have smoked more marijuana in the last 2 months than I probably have in like.
I'm now part of a subscription service. Yeah.
Yeah, listen. Order wholesale. We're all decompressing somehow. And I feel like I knew just so many people who had an interesting, like, relationship with alcohol, mm-hmm. myself included, especially at the beginning of the pandemic when we were all like, everything's canceled. We're at home getting wasted. And then people were like, I can't do this every night. What's happening? And just the back and forth of it all. But our boy Keith, he, you know, highlights that a lot of these incidences where people are being like crazy fucking rude also maybe involve somebody using some sort of substance. Mm. So whether you're like drinking before you get on a flight, mm-hmm. so you're like drinking at the airport or something, obviously it could play into auto accidents and all that stuff. And then just like aggression driven mm-hmm. kind of auto accidents or mm-hmm. like road rage just by itself. A lot of that can come from like some sort of substance use. And I did think this was a larger statistic maybe than I would have thought in a brief period of time. But Americans have been drinking 14% more days a month during the pandemic, and drug overdoses have also increased since 2019. Yeah. And just like substance abuse treatment, never, you know, especially easy to come by, way further interrupted by COVID.
Well, it's so expensive. You know? It's even if you can afford it, there's like waiting lists and shit. Mm-hmm. And oh my God. Also, people get taken advantage of it, programs. Anyway, it's difficult. I mean,
that's truly all another episode. Yeah. Listen, you guys. But Americans also, unsurprisingly and upsettingly, have been buying more guns, which, you know, may help explain some of this uptick in the murder rate.
It is upsetting.
But gun sales spiked in 2020 and 2021, mm-hmm. and more people are being killed with guns mm-hmm. than before, which is really upsetting and disheartening. And then in 2020, you know, police recovered nearly twice as many firearms within a year of purchase as they did in 2019. Hmm. A short, you know, air quotes, time to crime window that suggests criminal intent. Basically what that means is like if they bought the gun within a year, you know, people are saying that it's almost this like impulsive kind of thing. It's people that they're taking guns off people who haven't, you know, had them for a long time, which I'm like, okay.
Yeah, someone who might never before have wanted a gun, like suddenly has a desire to have one.
Right. And more plainly, just like thousands of guns purchased in 2020 were almost immediately used in crimes.
Yeah.
According to
for the crime then. Yeah.
Well, exactly. According to, you know, some stuff that was written up in a publication called The Trace. So owning a gun obviously doesn't make it more likely that you'll kill someone, but it makes it more likely that you'll be successful if you try. You know what I'm saying?
And it's just like a great way to escalate a situation.
Absolutely. Do you know what never de-escalated something? Someone just pulling out a gun.
100%.
Never de-escalated a situation that way. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you ever have to transport one secretly across state lines, I recommend a birthday bag with tissue paper.
And Jamie Ryan is not saying she did this, but if you've listened to the podcast, anyway.
It's a story for another time. Sometimes we talk about mania, sometimes we don't. Anyway, also another problem that we learned about in this article is that we're all social beings and isolation is changing us. And this I would harken back to up top when we were talking at the beginning. I mentioned like the feeling when you don't see your roommate for 5 days in college or after, and then you're like, oh my God, like this person is mad at me. Like I'm only seeing notes about the vacuum cleaner on the fridge and that's it. She must not want to hang out with me. And really, like your roommate was just busy and everything's fine, but not seeing each other like just made it weird. So
yeah, it goes back to the loneliness episode, not to do two callbacks and one fup date, but
fine.
Man.
But we're very social creatures and this isolation has been tough. And they tell us that the pandemic loosens ties between people. And that's true. Kids stop going to school. Their parents stop going to work. People stop going to church. Some.
This is why you're feeling out of step with your homies, just like I said.
Yeah, it is. You've grown, perhaps, without them. But socialists think that all of this isolation has started to shift the way that we behave. And I would say, like, yeah, for sure. It's been long enough.
You're like, no shit.
Yeah, it's more than 2 weeks. So Robert Sampson, who is a sociologist at Harvard who studies social disorder, says we're more likely to break rules when our bonds to society are weakened. Okay, like antisocial kind of stuff. When we become untethered, we tend to prioritize our own private interests over those of others or the public. And then we're all libertarians in the woods.
I mean, truly libertarians in the woods.
The turn of the 20th century scholar Emil Durkheim, Emil maybe, or Emily.
Emil. No, this is a person I actually know, Emil Durkheim.
Yeah, I don't know who this is.
But I don't know shit about Enrique Iglesias. Okay.
It's good that I could provide some cultural value. So Durkheim called this state anomie, A-N-O-M-I-E, or a lack of social norms that leads to lawlessness. It's fascinating.
Oh, yeah, baby. This is taking me back to sociology 101. Shout out to my sophomore year of college.
Quote, we are moral beings to the extent that we are social beings, Durkheim wrote. In the past 2 years, we have stopped being social. And in many cases, we have stopped being moral, too. I see you.
Okay. Damn.
Yeah. Now we're going to hear from Richard Rosenfeld, who is a criminologist at the University of Missouri in St. Louis. And he tells us we've got, I think, a generalized sense that the rules simply don't apply. And in some places, he says, police arrested fewer people during the pandemic. So, like, you know, people weren't out as much. People weren't, like, working as much. Certain people were ignored during the pandemic by law enforcement. And he tells us that when enforcement goes down, people tend to relax their commitment to the rules. So, yeah, like, I mean,
it's like speeding. That's the easiest example.
Absolutely.
Nobody's enforcing it. Who's not speeding? I'd be speeding.
Of course. And so, like, we're all thinking, like, that doesn't really matter. So, though it's been a life-saving tool throughout the pandemic, mask wearing, for example, has likely made this problem worse. Just as it's easier to scream at someone on Twitter than in real life, it's easier to rage at a masked flight attendant than someone whose face you can fully see.
I thought that was so poignant and not something I considered, but I was like, yeah, a fucking course.
100%. And they said that you really don't see, or Samson said, you really don't see a human being so much as you're just seeing someone masked. And the one study found that face masks don't dehumanize the wearer. Another small experiment found that they do impair people's ability to detect emotions. Of fucking course.
Which, of course they do.
What was that whack-ass first study? I'm sorry.
I don't believe in that first study. I don't believe in the study.
Flaws in the methodology.
We got questions. I don't know how they did this. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm here.
It's interesting, though, because one of the things then, too, that, you know, Olga goes on to kind of discuss in here is that maybe people are saying, OK, well, all this weird behavior and the way people are acting out, is this something that like mental illness can explain?
And we all have more mental illness than we did a few years ago.
Certainly, but what Olga and other folks are speaking to in this article is that mental illness really can't explain this because some of the strange behavior that has attracted the most attention seems, you know, to some folks to involve people suffering from delusions or hallucinations. But a few weeks ago at the time of this publication, you know, Twitter jumped on a story of this flight attendant who subdued an unruly passenger by like hitting him on the head with the coffee pot, which I'm just like, wow.
The passenger needs to be threatening you, your life, perhaps, in order for you to do that.
Right. And it was this moment, too, that, like, people were like, yeah, like, real righteous about.
Oh, I remember.
You know, because everybody's ready to see, like, a jackass getting what they deserved,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
But the fuller story is actually, like, significantly more disturbing in that the man told flight attendants that, quote, people were attempting to hurt him and they followed him onto the plane. And that, again, he heard the individuals harming his family over the telephone. Okay, so, like, this guy is, like, not doing great.
I would say flight attendant is agitated.
Well, exactly. And so you're like, okay, mental illness, but, like, the person who, like, became violent was, like,
right,
you know.
Right. And this person's, so, like, literally telling you that they're confused and unwell.
Right. And in January, there was a guy who shoved a woman in front of a train in Times Square.
I remember that.
I mean, it was it was cited repeatedly mm-hmm. as an example of the uptick in assaults at the time. And, you know, folks cited that, you know, he showed some symptoms of like schizophrenia and had, you know, spun through a cycle of like, you know, jail stints and psychiatric hospitalizations. And then, you know, people had some questions about how or why he was discharged to the streets, et cetera, et cetera. But the pandemic has had some measurable effects on mental health, like no doubt. And the most common issue among people who contracted COVID-19, anxiety and depression, I think a lot of that probably is has to do, if I were to guess and pontificate, it's like, okay, yeah, COVID-19 and like this can affect, you know, your physical health, but you had to quarantine. Maybe you're anxious about if you're going to be okay or not. It's sad to be alone. Like all of these things,
maybe
the whole
you lost
experience.
Your job. Yeah.
Right. And so throughout the pandemic, you know, treatment for these, you know, severe mental health problems like schizophrenia, you know, bipolar disorder, harder to access, mm-hmm. you know, especially for people with limited resources. Mm-hmm. What if you lost your job and your health insurance? Like, oh, we could go on and on. And in early 2020, some psychiatrists suspended group therapy again because like COVID mm-hmm. and then other in-person things. You know, a lot of people move therapy to Zoom and all sorts
well,
of
stuff
like
that.
And then
you have to have a computer or like a smartphone or something. There's like very gated.
Right. And then you think about people who don't have the resources who might find themselves in like an ER. Mm-hmm. But now the ER is full of COVID patients. So like they're not doing a lot of psychiatric intake.
Mm-hmm.
And some hospitals have like periodically repurposed psych beds for COVID patients, which led to an even greater shortage. And at one point last year, Virginia's, you know, mental hospitals were, air quote, dangerously full. And several had stopped admitting new folks wow. because of a lack of staff. And just staffing issues have plagued hospitals, you know, everywhere else for mm-hmm. all sorts of obvious and probably other reasons we like don't even have insight into, right?
Mm-hmm.
The majority of people with mental illness, and this is always true, are not violent. And most people with mental illness who, you know, commit violence have other problems. So, like, it goes back to, like, the substance abuse or, like, anger issues or, like, a recent trauma or some sort of mm-hmm. catalyst that, like, you know, causes somebody to, you know, break a little bit. But people with severe mental illnesses are only, like, a really tiny percentage of the population. And past research shows that those folks commit like 3-5% of violent acts. So there's your stat on like, yeah, like being mentally ill doesn't make you violent. So it couldn't possibly be responsible with that percentage being the percentage for this like huge surge in misbehavior. It just like the data doesn't line up
and
for that to
also,
be true.
It's also really dangerous to like imply that. And I think it's really,
yes.
like, a lot of times like something that people jump to is like, oh, this is like wild and crazy behavior. Like this person is mentally ill. Therefore like mentally ill people like are dangerous.
Right.
And I am glad that like they hit that that's not true. But like
it would be the, I think, quote, easy explanation. But I love that it's even in this article backed up with data that they're like, yeah,
yes.
it doesn't compute.
And if you like apply this to the situation on the plane with the guy who thought that like someone was like had kidnapped and was harming his family and that he heard it over
right.
the phone. Like that is a mentally ill individual who's like perhaps struggling with like some psychosis and mm-hmm. is, as far as we know, not behaving violently. But the flight attendant
right.
read that as a threat or as violent, probably
right.
because culture constantly tells us that mentally ill people are violent and threatening.
Right.
And so, like, I don't know. Like, the more that we can, like, destigmatize mental illness, like, the less incidents like that man getting hit on the coffee pot on his flight will happen, you know?
Right.
So I think that's an interesting little kind of tie back around.
Well, 100%. And to drive that point even further home of like bad behavior on planes, the FAA said that 72% of unruly passenger incidents last year were mask related. Basically suggesting that they have a lot more to do with politics
yeah.
than paranoia
right.
or some sort of other, you know, altered mental state.
And I'll give it to you. You could have some delusions about like that the mask has like poisonous fibers in it. Like it could happen, but that's not
sure.
mostly what's happening.
Right. And maybe that was your delusion. Maybe it didn't cause you to be unruly and violent. Okay?
Exactly.
So regarding like people causing these scenes, our boy Tom Insel, who was the former director of a terrible name, but he was the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health and the author of a book called Healing. He says, I think those are assholes. It's so important to distinguish people who have a mental illness from people who just do egregious things.
It is
and
indeed.
Shout out to you, Tom Insel. Terrible name, but I couldn't have said it better myself.
He's keeping the incels out of here. Good for him.
That's right.
So some of the antisocial behavior that Americans are seeing will resolve itself, the author thinks, as the pandemic loosens its grip. And like, I'm sure we'll hit some kind of homeostasis in most of the country. Like masks are coming off, like people are like mostly doing things normally again. If you go to the Midwest, it's like it never happened at all. And the rules and rhythms.
Sounds worse, I promise.
Oh, I'm sure that it is.
Go to Florida anyway.
Or Arizona anyway. I drove across many, many red states and boy. Anyway, so all of these rules and rhythms that, you know, kept America running smoothly are starting to settle back into place finally. So the return to normalcy like maybe means return to better behavior, but improvement may be slow. But experts think that human interaction will eventually return to the pre-pandemic status quo. And the rise in kind of like disorderly conduct may simply be the unsavory side of a uniquely difficult time.
Truly uniquely difficult. Okay.
And exactly. And I did want to add, like, as we're reading all of this, I just keep thinking about like how much of like the negative feelings, like the stress, like the tension you feel literally just like in the street at all times. I think it's very economic and like, yes, it's pandemic. Yes, it's isolation, but I think it's, and maybe I'm seeing that more because I live in LA, but it feels very economic and like there's a lot of class resentment and, you know, like a lot of resentment of out of touchness and, a lot of, I think, justified anger, but also like just a lot of contention on all sides. Everyone thinks that their situation is the hardest, I think ultimately is what's happening.
And everybody's like looking to judge other people's behavior. Mm-hmm. Like I'll own this, like you know, take the CTA in Chicago and on public transit, like it's still a mandate pretty much everywhere I think in this country that you have to like wear a mask on public transit. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I mean, I do find myself like every time I'm on the CTA, like looking at people being like, that's not like how you wear a mask or that person mm-hmm. didn't even have one. And I'm like, why am I like spending this time with this heat in my body where I'm like monitoring other adults? Like, why?
And like, is there any other time in our life when we've done that?
Never.
I don't know. Yeah, but they tell us that there have been times when the entire nation has been challenged, as we are currently being challenged. Insel is telling us this. And he says, you see both things, people who do heroic things and people who do some very defensive, protective, and oftentimes ridiculous things. And him saying that made me think to a previous plague, the Black Plague, and how like that was such a time of like witchcraft and like superstition and nationalism and like so much fear and like isolation stuff. And I think probably in any time like this, you see people like your true nature comes out. Like half the people or maybe more than half the people are like exclusively going to protect their own family, like fuck society at large. And then there's like a larger group where, well, right now it might be a larger group, I don't know, that gives a shit about everyone else. But anyway, I was reading about like the Black Plague and kind of like through line stuff about like the way that the economy collapsed because inflation was out of control like immediately during the Black Plague, and that it also caused social unrest and then eventually like social change, like in a way that had never happened before, that actually brought the Middle Ages to a close. And I don't know, I just think that it's an interesting through line to like what's happening right now, where we have like this intense pressure and people are doing like really great and terrible things. But yeah, it's just interesting to see people's like base natures come out. Like some people are leaning like super hard into religion. Like it's just crisis mode.
I think that's right. I think a lot of it is crisis mode and like
Do you protect yourself naturally or no?
Worse. Yeah. I mean, listen. Do you flip off me driving a car? Maybe. It's possible.
Yeah, I guess all we can do is control our own rage and not contribute to it, not pay it forward, if you will.
That's right. Haley Joel Osment, 316.
I hate that movie so much.
Yeah, it was a book first, I think.
That doesn't make it better.
I know. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. All to say, people are acting weird, and it does give me hope that, you know, the science of it all, people are like, yeah, I think we'll get back to normal, because I'm so ready for people in these streets to be driving a little better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I am as well.
Truly ready for it. And I guess on that note, thank you for joining us for this month's FUPdate. I hope you're surrounded by just a little less bad behavior than some of what we described, even if it's just in like your TikTok or Instagram algorithms. You know, it's hard mm-hmm. to watch all those videos where people are acting a fool. So I don't know. I would suggest you don't, because it's upsetting. But if you have some that you'd like to speak to, or I don't know, just have like a crazy, unruly behavior story you'd like to tell us, as always, you can get at us on the internet via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, and on Twitter at WAYLT tweets. Good night, good morning, good day, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.